Action Park Media. All you can do is laugh at her. Doesn't anybody know how to pray?
We're not drinking. This is water. Liquid death. Liquid death.
Daddy Doug Ellen wouldn't let us drink beer, so no Irish crickets today.
Yeah, no Irish crickets. It's a sober live show.
Not yet. Maybe a little vodka later.
Yeah. And Charlie Sheen will be out soon, so calm down. I know everybody wants to see Charlie.
Sounds like they want to see Charlie. What if nobody knows me? They probably don't, but they're going to get to know you, Doug. Yeah. They're going to get to know you.
So anyway, welcome to Victory of the Podcast Live. If you're expecting a stand-up comedy show, this is not it. So
it's a sit-down comedy-ish show, yeah. I guess.
But for us, I mean, this is so surreal. We've had a show that was off the air.
What's your name? Introduce yourself.
I'm Doug Ellen. Sorry.
Kevin Connolly.
Kevin Dillon.
But we had a show that ended almost 10 years ago, and then this guy came up with this idea to start a podcast.
This guy. Your buddy. Your friend.
This guy, man.
This little guy. And then
been making that joke for 20 years. No reason for him to stop now.
And then all of a sudden, things started working, and we started getting these offers to do these live shows, which is crazy. And Connolly sold us. He goes, you know, the Eagles came back after 20 years. And we could do that. And the next thing I know, we got Charlie Sheen, and we're in an Airbnb, and Dylan and Charlie are roommates on this trip. So
Charlie got the guest house.
Like the old days, being in a foxhole with Charlie. It's great.
How is it? Like, how has it been on this little trip, this road trip? Has it been
It's been great. Just, getting tight with Charlie again. It's been amazing. Oh, you mean this trip?
Well,
it's been kind of short. I mean, we were supposed to be here for the Super Bowl. I don't know if any of you guys had tickets to that. I want to apologize. I got COVID. It ruined everything. But I had an idea of them rolling me out, like, in plexiglass.
Yeah.
And, it was a bad idea.
He dead seriously wanted to do the Hannibal Lecter. I was so stressed out. I was like, that's a great idea. Yeah. Let's put you in a glass box. Doug, why have you been comparing us to the Eagles? We're not the Eagles, bro.
No. I know we're not the Eagles.
We are not the Eagles.
I thought that was the sales.
You love that documentary.
The documentary was amazing. So, but I want to know, Kevin, I mean, what made you think that a podcast would be interesting and that we could kind of make this happen?
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about the podcast, and it's so long ago that we did the show, it's interesting people's memories, what people remember. And nobody's lying, they just don't remember as well as I do. It's funny, there's all three people, we'll all look at one thing and be like, oh, that's Dylan, will be like, that's the day that Connolly was late. And I was like, no, you were late that day, right? So time.
I'm calling bullshit on that.
But I'm saying, we're just looking back, and before we record the podcast, we'll watch the episode, and it's just funny to see how differently people remember things 20 years, 18 years after the fact, or whatever it is. So that's fun. We've been having a great time, and it's fun to watch these episodes and watch Doug squirm in his seat, and even when it's Dylan's line, Dylan will be like, Doug, I can't believe you wrote that.
I love busting his chops. He's appalled by what he wrote, and I love it.
Yeah, you know, this show was kind of a miracle that it happened. I had never done anything in TV, and, I was friendly with Mark Wahlberg and knew his crew a little bit, and he said one day, you know, I follow them around with a camera. We should, like, do this show as a show. And when we started casting
it... Was it going to be a reality show at one point?
At one point, they wanted to do a reality show, yeah. And then, you know, when we tried to cast Mark and his crew... We just didn't get as tough.
They're definitely tougher than us.
Yeah, once we let off with Adrian, everything
Speak
changed.
Speak for yourself, bro.
Dylan probably could have been in either show.
He would have been able to fit somewhere into the Wahlberg crew, but Adrian and I and Jerry, not so much. Don't tell Jerry I said that.
But I want to talk about how it was from the beginning. I mean, Kevin Connolly was a successful actor on a lot of different TV shows, but you were kind of done with acting and just wanted to direct.
You've been using the retired word for so long. I mean, you don't retire at 32 unless you're a billionaire. It's not that. I just was, I don't know. I was just doing other things. And obviously when you look at Entourage in hindsight and you see what it was, of course it's a no-brainer. But at the time, it's a pilot. And Dylan will tell you, as an actor, you could do a pilot a year. Didn't George Clooney do 20 pilots or something before ER? Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, so I've done some that nobody ever saw, and they were great. It's really, really sucks when you do a pilot and nobody sees.
Yeah, you love it, and you work so hard on it, and it literally goes on a shelf. Yeah. So at the time, you know, it just was a pilot, obviously in hindsight.
And I had written the script, and I wrote, I mean, the character was a Jack Russell Terrier, you know? That's what I wrote.
Short jokes all night. Doug Ellis in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
And the only person we saw that was even close, like, for the role, because Kevin was not coming into audition, was 6'2", 220, and all those jokes would have been gone. We would have had nothing, but...
What would you have done? 20 years.
But people kept calling me and saying, there's this guy, Connolly, Kevin Connolly, and I kept trying to reach out to him, and our casting director said, you know, he's not interested in doing this and whatever. So when we finally got it going, like, what was your feeling? Did you think maybe we had something different than you had before? Or
I just, like, these guys are just the stalkers, man. Like, these guys got to leave you alone. So, no, we went in, and I got called into a sit-down of sorts from somebody said to me, Mark Wahlberg, you got to go sit with him. I was like, okay. And Mark said, Kev, I would just ask you as a favor to sit and talk to Doug, and kind of the rest is history. And then I met Dylan at the test.
At many of the auditions.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin came in for the audition. I actually am very good friends with his ex-girlfriend, who told me the night before, my ex-boyfriend's coming in to audition for you, and you got to give him this part. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's what's going to happen. And
do you remember what happened, Doug? You actually, I looked at the script for the audition. I was like, I can't make this work. There's not enough here.
The writing sucks.
So I said, I know the writing is great, but it's four guys. I said, make it two guys.
Yeah.
And give me all the other lines.
Basically, you said I need more dialogue.
I took everyone else's lines and all the funny lines, and I was able to nail it. So,
but, so I if had, you do say
did
so
you
yourself.
Rewrite it?
You took a bunch of lines. You've always been doing that.
I got the
Well,
parts.
We always like to talk, though, about when
nominated
you...
Nominated for a couple Emmys along the way, too, right, Kev?
Yeah.
Golden Globes, too. But Dylan walked in... And as I recall, golf spikes.
Yes. I was playing golf right afterwards, so I was like, let's hurry up and get this over with. I got a tee time.
And, you know, the thing
I had a Titleist hat. I had golf spikes on.
Yeah, and the thing
maybe
that
even
happens...
shorts, too, and a collared shirt.
Once in a while, you get lucky enough. And Dylan, the first words that came out of your mouth, I was like, this is a miracle, because I couldn't have found someone who was better for it. So when you walked out of that audition, though, did you go, oh, okay, that's something I'll never hear from again, or I think there's something here?
No, I felt good about it.
Yeah.
I felt good about it, because I had the room laughing. If you get the room laughing...
Yeah.
You're doing something right.
Yeah. What are you doing right now? Okay.
Laugh, look. See, look at that.
They ain't laughing now. No, I'm kidding.
You know, we were such underdogs when we made this show. Like I said, it was my first show. And Dylan, do you remember? We'd be shooting scenes, and there was like, you have the HBO executives, you have this, and they're kind of treating me like I was a kid, which sadly I was, even though it was my 55th birthday yesterday, and somehow it's gone by quickly.
Happy
but
birthday, Doug.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
Man.
By the way, no call, no gift, nothing. But
I didn't know. I didn't know.
No, I got you what you got me for my birthday.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know,
it's at your hotel room. I left it. I had him leave it at the
But hotel, when we were doing Airbnb. The show, Dylan obviously has been this seasoned actor who'd worked on 50 things, and I'm this kind of kid doing this. And do you remember some of our stuff on the pilot? Like, I'd go, Kev, why don't you try it like this? And I'd hear him under his breath, who's this fucking meathead? You know?
Well, so it's true. Honest, it's true.
We called you guys the meatheads. There was about maybe six guys, producers and writers and stuff like that. Doug was the head meathead. We called the meathead village. Oh, no.
Well,
here comes the meathead.
That's what it is.
Give us the notes.
When you're doing a pilot, there's so many hands-on. So you got HBO, you got the studio, you got the producers. This is everybody around a monitor. And then the minute you end a take, we all look at each other, and everybody's whispering in their ear. It's like, oh, what the fuck was wrong with that? What's the problem? What's the problem? Like, oh, boy, here they come. And then here comes Doug with a bunch of people. Yeah. Could you try to say...
I think at one stage I said, look, the notes can only come from one guy.
Yeah.
I said, Doug, let's make it you. Just bring us the notes. We can't handle notes from five different people because they're all different notes.
Yeah. And Doug is a rhythm guy, right? So he's always about rhythm and about how he hears things in his head and... He's from Long Island. We're all from New York. So he had it in his head. And one day, this is one of the first big fights, was Adrian Vince is supposed to say, I don't do TV. And he was saying, I don't do TV.
TV.
Doug's like, that's not how you're saying it. What are you talking? What are you doing?
It's TV, not TV.
Wow, that's not how we say growing up, TV. I'm from New York. He said TV. Doug's like, well, can you just say TV? No. I'm not going to say it. So we had a lot of things like that, but you started to learn eventually, aside from trusting Doug, that there was a method to the madness, but he's rhythmic. He's playing music to a certain extent when he writes. And as long as you do that and you give him one with the words, he'll be okay.
And that's, you know, what one of the interesting things is to, you know, casting is everything. You need a script, obviously, but if you can't find a cast, and I was so obsessive about finding guys that I think I would have been friends with in high school, because my best friends are still from elementary school. So I really wanted to feel that from the beginning of the show. And when we put these four guys together, who I don't, you guys don't even know each other prior to this, or do you?
No, Dylan, do you remember when we had that really weird moment at the HBO test when, you know, it's like there's Vince,
yeah,
Turtle.
I didn't know who was playing what character. I was like, what are you playing? Are you Turtle?
I think I delivered a line to you as Turtle. Yeah, we're like, all right, trying to figure out
who
was playing.
How dare you call me Turtle?
Trying to figure out who was playing who.
I saw Jerry at a lot of the auditions. We both smoked cigarettes at the time. I kept mooching cigarettes on him. You got another smoke?
Yeah.
But yeah,
you guys had to do more auditions.
So we knew each other a bit. Yeah. Kevin got a
I only did
very
it once.
Few auditions. How many auditions did you do?
I only did one.
Really?
Yeah. No, it was fun though. I mean,
Doug, how many times you bring me in? 4 or 5?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, little known thing that Dylan, I'm not even sure if he knows, but
uh-oh.
Yeah, they didn't want me.
Yeah. I mean, Dylan, like I said, from the second he walked in, he blew the creative
people. I did not blow anyone. Let's get this straight right now.
Now we're talking.
You might have blown a couple
people.
Now they're laughing. He blew the whole room.
You can see it's not me that was the animal. It was this guy.
But yeah.
But Dylan did his audition, and myself and whoever else was in the room, we're crying. He was that funny. And when we walked out of the room, the head of HBO calls me and he goes, yeah, that drama guy, he doesn't fit in with the rest of this crew.
Well, he's 10 years older than everybody.
Yeah, well, that was the other
thing. How did we go to high school together? Nobody ever
said it. It is crazy, because you're 36, Jerry was 24, and we're pretending they went to high school together. We played he was older, but nobody cared. But the head of HBO was like, I just don't see it. And what I had heard was that Steve Buscemi, great actor, made the show Baseball Wives, and they kept telling him they didn't like his cinematographer, and he kept saying, oh, I love him. So they finally called him, the same guy at HBO, and said, look, it's your show. If that's the guy you want, that's the guy you get, and that show never saw the light of day. So what happened with this was they said, you got to keep looking. And I called everybody. I'm like, maybe I know nothing, but this guy's one of the funniest people I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what I'm going to do. So like 2 days later, he calls me. He goes, hey, it's your show. Do what you want to do. So luckily,
you're like, I'm not going to fall for that one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Victory!
And by the way, you hear those stories a lot, though, but I mean, and I'm not just saying this, Kev, because you didn't blow everybody in the room. You did blow the room away. And
it's impossible
to imagine.
To blow a whole room of. That's impossible.
Possible to imagine you blowing
the
room.
And Dylan has tried.
But I'm saying, you hear the stories all the time about people that might have been cast. I mean, we wouldn't have had a show without Dylan. I mean, let's face it.
You know, it's really, you know, it's one of those things where.
Thank you, bro.
You would have lived without me. You could have squeaked by without me. But
absolutely
Dylan,
not, brother. Absolutely not.
I believe it. And, you know, I did a show right after where I could not cast what I thought was the best written character on the page. And from the time we got the five of you guys, Jeremy, Adrian, Jerry, I was like, I can't believe this feels so real to me. These guys feel so real. So what I wanted to talk about is Mark. Mark decided, put you guys on a private jet, bring you to Las Vegas, and let you guys bond. So tell me a little bit about that trip.
Epic.
What you can tell.
Connolly was in rare form, I can tell you that.
Well, that wasn't my first rodeo either. No. You know what I mean? I'd been there before, but it was great to be with the guys. But yeah, it was interesting. And, you know, Mark and his guys move. They just move like the wind. It just happens. So it was really us trying to play catch up with them.
Yeah.
And then Dylan, I think you got hammered that night. I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah, we did. We did some gambling, and to be honest, we just bonded really.
Right.
We got really tight right away.
Yeah.
And then, Adrian and Jerry, and it was great.
You know, Dylan and I have a terrible habit of wearing the same Halloween costume every year, right?
Yeah, but not the exact. We don't.
By the way, the fact that they still dress up is a little weird, but.
I usually go with a pirate or I go with a vampire.
You've been a vampire since 2003. Yeah. You got one pair of contacts and he just does his hair.
You're Gilligan from Gilligan's Island every year.
I am Gilligan from Gilligan's Island, but now nobody knows who I am. I'm like,
yeah, by the way, for the young people in the crowd, no one knows who that is anymore.
What are you supposed to be?
I'm like, wow, Dylan, you just threw in the vampire teeth, couple contacts, and away you go.
I did a vampire movie, so I had the teeth, I had the contacts, it was great.
You're like, I'm going to be this for Halloween for the next 20 years.
But back to casting for a second, because I remember Adrian, who is a little more, and don't get offended, but a little more artsy than these guys, was the one guy who's like,
I'm wildly offended by that one. So artistic.
But does he fit into this? And I remember, Dylan, tell the story from your perspective.
You want me to tell it, Dylan? Because you're...
What story are we talking about?
Don't back off.
Where you asked him who his favorite football team was.
You know what? I don't really remember going down that way. So I'll let Kevin Connolly say
what... the story. So this is when Dylan and I... Dylan's in a vampire costume when he tells the story, which is also scary. But I said, hey, nice to meet you. Hey, we hear great day. I hear great things about you. Vice versa. I said, hey, have you met Adrian yet? He said, yeah. No, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. There was one thing. I said, what? And he said, well, I asked him if he was a Jets or a Giants guy, and he said he didn't like football.
He said he didn't like sports, any sports.
And then Dylan said, I don't know about you, but a guy that doesn't like sports, kind of like a guy that doesn't like chicks, if you know what I mean.
I may have said that. I don't recall. It's a long time.
We had a couple cocktails, That might have slipped through there. But Adrian, you know, we would go do sports things. Like, we threw out the first pitch, and I don't want to argue, Kevin. I don't want to argue about who had a better pitch.
Well, I threw a much better pitch than you.
Whatever. We can't do that.
He lobbed it in, man.
But Adrian was like...
You're talking about the Dodgers game?
Yeah, I'm at full windup.
Yeah, little Louis T for anyone who knows that.
Well, by the way, you could just Google it. But you fucking airmailed.
Who bounced it?
Grenier rolled one against the wall. But Adrian would always say to us, like, hey, guys, if they ask me, who are some Yankees? You know, like, listen, bro, Derek Jeter. You can't go wrong. You know what Derek Jeter is. So Adrian was always, you know, it's funny because we had him on the podcast recently, you know, and he's such a different guy, man. He's married. He's just got so much going on. He's grown up. But, you know, he always wanted to fit in with the sports thing. But, you know, we tried to help him. And he just... But now he's like Mr. Sportster. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
By the way, speaking of Derek Jeter, do you know what his alias was when he stayed in a hotel? You know, he wouldn't go under Derek Jeter. He went under Johnny Chase, I believe. Might have been Johnny Drama, but I thought it was Johnny Chase.
You know, we were so lucky on the show.
And I heard that, and I had to verify it. So when I saw him, I was like, is it true that you...
him on the spot. What was he going to say?
And he's like, absolutely, I did, yeah.
It's probably
certainly wasn't
like,
E.
Sure.
That wasn't his alias.
It wasn't
alias.
E.
It's not under Eric Murphy.
Is there an E staying here?
So we got really lucky. I mean, the sports players and athletes from all sorts of walks of life really became fans of the show, which was pretty awesome.
And Eminem. Dylan's got a shout-out in an Eminem song he continues...
Continues
to taunt me about
Connelly, so bad. It's called So Bad.
Connelly, I'm combing through this Eminem album. I haven't heard an E shout out yet, but I'll let you know if anything happens.
I'm listening, but
but thinking of the sports players, what, you know,
Tom Brady.
What was your favorite?
Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson. I got that cameo. Phil was great, yeah.
By the way, I ran into
him on the golf course. And
by the way, that was a great story.
Phil,
though.
On the leaderboard today.
Is he?
Are you serious? I don't even see it today. Well, the Mickelson story is pretty funny because Kevin calls me up because I ran into Phil Mickelson.
I put him on the phone. I called him and I said, here, talk to Phil.
Yeah, which put me on the spot because I knew the season was airing. And if you remember, Phil had a meltdown at the Open.
At Wingfoot. I'm a member of Wingfoot.
So I knew the episode was airing a week later where Ari says he's melting down like Mickelson at Wingfoot.
Now, that wasn't scripted, though.
Yes, it was.
Oh, was it scripted? Yeah, all right. I didn't read that part of the script.
He only reads my stuff.
These guys will flip it around for whatever works for them. I didn't write that. You improvised it.
That definitely wasn't improv. But when he puts me on the phone with Phil, I'm like, of course I want Phil on the show. But when he sees this, he's going to lose his mind.
Well, he's going to quit.
It hadn't aired yet. So the show hadn't aired. And it was just about to air the next week.
So anyway, a year later, I go, okay, maybe he's forgotten about it. Let's get Phil on the show now. And I call Kevin. I go, get Phil on the show. And he goes, he's in. So I'm like, great. When Phil walks on the set, he looks at me. He goes, he's melting down like Mickelson at Wingfoot, huh? He goes, I'm sitting in bed with my wife, minding my own business. And my favorite show comes on, and this is what I wrote. So anyway, we had lots of stuff like that, but we were fortunate enough that they were fans, and they were good. We got Russell Wilson on a broke Connolly's leg.
But we also, a lot of times early on, we didn't know that people were listening. So we would, whatever, maybe take a fun shot at somebody, not really thinking much, especially early on.
Yeah.
Towards the end, Dylan and I would be like, dude, really, no, I know this guy. Like, I can't make this joke about his movie bombing. I'll get killed, right?
Yeah.
So in the pilot, I call Vince Vaughn a puffy motherfucker, right?
Yeah,
now,
he did not like that, bro.
Now, I will tell you, not improv, all right?
He did not like that.
And when you are an actor in a pilot, you don't just tell people, you just read the lines as scripted. I wrote the line. And I knew him kind of peripherally, so we're out in a bar, and I'm like, and he's a big dude. I'm
he's like, huge. He's like 6'5".
I'm like,
by the way, everyone's big to Kevin.
I'm like, I think I just got the cold shoulder from Vince Vaughn. That can't be. Let me hang around. And then his buddy came up to me and said, yeah, he's a little bent out of shape. Maybe stay
clear. You like the puffy line, bro.
Like, I didn't write it. Doug Allen, 801
well,
Elm Street.
Doug would put us write these things. And occasionally I'd be like, I can't do it, Doug. I can't do it. I know these guys.
The interesting thing about the Vince Vaughn line, though, is Vince was named after Vince Vaughn. Because before I cast this show, and it's crazy to think about how big Favreau and Vince Vaughn got, but when we were doing it in 2001, I thought there was a chance they would be E and Vince, to be honest with you, like before we ever started casting. And then obviously Favreau became the biggest director in the world, and Vaughn became what
You're
he became.
You're saying that Favreau would have gotten that role over me?
Probably.
I don't blame you.
He could have got mine, too.
But I love, we used to do these shout-outs, and Kevin, you're going to have to take ownership of this one, but sometimes we'd have personal beefs with people that we'd put on the show, and we had this one line, and Rob Weiss, who was a writer on the show, had this problem with Kevin Smith, the director, so we had this line about Kevin Smith, but Connolly calls me up and goes, can I change that? Well, so tell us about that, because we had Stephen Dorff chasing us all around for 2 years.
He's still bent out of shape about that one. Yeah. Stephen Dorff, who I just knew from around. And by the way, it's fine now, but there was a moment where, you know, we didn't get along very well. And by the way, you guys had taken like 3 or 4 shots at Kevin Smith. I was like, come on, let's throw somebody else into the mix here.
Yeah.
And Doug was like, nobody is going to know who that is. And
do you guys know who Stephen Dorff is?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so anyway, Connolly changed the line to he could close a movie quicker than Stephen Dorff.
That was terrible.
Terrible.
I tried to talk you off of that one. And I know Stephen. I was like, this is bad.
Entertainment Weekly put it in as the line of the week, okay?
And not only that, many, many, many years go by, and he and I have since, whatever, it's fine.
He hates you still. What are you talking
about? By the way, last 4th of July, Dylan, we're sitting there. It's kind of an awkward but totally normal thing. Nobody's going to bring it up. And Dylan comes over. He puts his arm around both of us. He's like, so do we get this thing worked out yet or what? I'm lucky. We're both looking at him like, Kev, what's going fine? We were making great small talk. What are you doing?
But that's the interesting thing about the show. We're locked in a room. We're making it. We don't know what the outside world is thinking and stuff. And people started taking the show as real. We had Andrew Kevin Walker on, who's a famous screenwriter that wrote Seven and other things. And, you know, so I bring him on and we're getting...
Steve Gagan.
Okay, who wrote Traffic and won an Oscar. And we wrote a line, he's going to rewrite Medellin on the show. And we said, oh, he gets $30,000 a week to do a rewrite. So he calls me up and he's so humble and he's so nice. And he's like, Doug, listen, people take this show very seriously. I'm like, yeah. He's like, so, you know, you say I make $30,000 a week. And, you know, and I said, okay. He goes, I make like $75,000 a week. I said,
great.
I said, Steven, I'll make you make $250,000 a week.
Let's call it an even 100 and get your quota. Run that quota.
Like, we aimed to please, and we were always like that, whether it was Tom Brady or whoever was on. So, you know.
Except for Seth Rogen. That was another tough one, too. We're not going to go there. We won't go there.
I don't know if we're too inside.
It's not. Give him the quick rundown. Well, you know, Doug is sensitive.
It's a very simple rundown. But my son, who's in the back of this room, who played Ari's son on the show, He was probably seven. I was a Seth Rogen fan, and I saw Undeclared when we couldn't cast Turtle, and I said, I want New Yorkers, I want New Yorkers, but maybe this guy on the show is really funny. So I
so
love
you
Seth
wanted
Rogen.
Vince Vaughn, Favreau, and Rogen.
Can you imagine
over
that?
Me, Dylan, and Ferrara. By the way, it sounds like a super... You probably should have did it. You probably should have did it. It sounds like a good guess.
I would definitely not be doing live podcasts right now. So, but anyway, I'm getting on a plane with my son, and there's Seth Rogen on the cover of GQ. And I buy it because I like Seth Rogen. And in the article, while I'm flying on this plane with
but
my
weren't
son...
weren't you writing as well? Weren't
yeah,
you kind
no,
of
I'm writing on the plane with my son there. And he writes some line about a pilot that he had that didn't go at HBO. And he goes, and then they put crap like Entourage on. And I was like, what's this fat fuck's problem? So, so anyway, then I wrote the line that he's ugly. And then... It kind of came out, and then all of a sudden, and I don't know him. I've never met the guy and still think he's funny. But
I ran into him at Starbucks the day before the episode aired. I'm like, I want to apologize in advance.
Yeah, Dylan,
I had nothing to do with this.
Dylan will never just play dumb. Dylan be like, hey, listen, just so you know, tomorrow, probably going to get a couple calls.
Yeah.
Just know that I'm an actor on this show. I don't write anything.
And I think I said something about it being a running joke. I think he went, no, not a running joke.
Right.
It's bad enough when you mention it once, but a running joke.
Yeah, but I got a call like from TMZ or something. They're like, Seth Rogen says you're a moron, you know? And I kind of just reacted because I was still angry. I'm
childish.
Like, I said, Seth Rogen does not know me, so he doesn't know I'm a moron. But I've seen Seth Rogen, and I know he's ugly. So... so... But anyway, that being said, I still love Seth Rogen and I'm still a fan. But honestly, it's gone on and social media didn't even exist.
Oh, God, thank
so
God.
So Seth Rogen, worth $400 billion with 700 movies, is still going on about this because he would tweet it. This is 15 years ago. And when Twitter starts coming out, all of a sudden I'm getting tweets from Seth Rogen and his fucking minions. And I'm like, what do you want from me? You know, I'm not even working. Leave me alone. You know. So, but anyway, that's how that happened.
Oh, I told you, I was one night, and before it came out, but the word was out, I ran into Jonah Hill, who I knew peripherally, and he's like, heard you got something about Rogan on the show this weekend. I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. He's like, well, what is it? I'm like, yeah, listen, man, I don't want to get involved. I don't think I say anything. But he's like, well, just give me, what vein is it in? I was like, hey, man, I'm really on the spot here. You just watch. He's like, give me something. Just throw a little nugget at me. I told him what it was, kind of. So he might have known that at Starbucks, Kev.
Well, I'll tell you what. I had the line originally. And I don't know if you recall.
I do
I'm
recall.
Said, I'm not going to say this line, bro.
You're scared of Seth Rogen, I remember.
Kevin, you were like, I'll do it. You jumped on it. You're like, give
well,
it to me.
Like
give me that line, I'll do it.
We're standing shooting. I'm like, we got to shoot something.
Someone's
so
got to say this
somebody's
line,
Somebody's got to say something. We'll be here all day, you know? Listen, at this point, we spend most of our lives on our phones, our computers. We're on them all day, all night, all the time. Essentially, we live online. That's why you need NordVPN, a service that protects your internal connection and privacy online. NordVPN gives you that protection in a single click, and it's not going to slow you down at all. Trust me, because we've been using it. And I can tell you right now that NordVPN is the fastest VPN on the planet. NordVPN is easy to use. Access from everywhere. Don't miss your favorite content from home when traveling abroad. It takes just a click. Open the map, click on a location, and you'll be connected in seconds. It's that easy. Find services at a lower price. A platform isn't available in your country? Simply change your virtual location. No more bandwidth throttling based on traffic type, since NordVPN encrypts all traffic. Your internet service provider can't slow down your streaming speed. Get an exclusive NordVPN deal at nordvpn.com/victory. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Charlie!
Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's so nice.
Wow, that'll get you in the mood, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's such a surreal thing because Charlie was, you know, one of the stars of my youth. And, you know, we're the same age pretty much.
We're the same age, Doug. I mean, give or take 2 years, like exactly 2 years.
But when I was growing up dreaming of being in the movies, Charlie was doing the movies that I loved. One with Kevin, one of my favorites of all time, Platoon.
Thank you.
And then to fit in with this crew, it pretty much happened instantaneously. And, you know, Charlie knows this a little bit about, but and not to put him on the spot, because Charlie is going to be in this new show as raw and real as anything you can imagine. But, you know, one of the inspirations for season 7 of Entourage, if anyone remembers that, where Vince kind of had a little bit of a meltdown, was inspired not by any real research, but just my outer looking look at Charlie Sheen. And then when I was lucky enough to meet him, I said, you know, and he said, I've never seen Entourage.
That was awkward.
I had no reason to lie. but then what did I do?
Yeah, you watched the whole thing in like a week.
Like a day?
No, it was 10 days. you know, I'm raising kids at the same time. you know what the only problem with walking out to that clip is that if I don't get out here throwing 101, I fucking suck. And another thing is sitting back there for, you know, a good chunk of time, I'm thinking, cool, they fucking forgot I'm here. I don't have to do shit tonight. And then I'm thinking, well, this is kind of like being the fourth guest on The Tonight Show. If you've never been on The Tonight Show, there is no fourth guest. Yeah. So thank you for inviting me. It's like, what the hell? Thank you.
And by the way, this was Connolly's idea. Let's bring him out late. That's not true.
That's not true. Everything was there. Where was the chair? Dylan, were you hiding the chair?
I didn't hide the chair. No.
I don't think you wanted Sheen out here. I think Dylan's
first of all, we know Charlie's been on more sets because in the back room there's a little TV and he said, there's only 3 chairs. Is the stool for me? So I saw 4 chairs
on this
stage.
There was 4 chairs. Well, there's 4 chairs now.
So, anyway, Charlie, you watched the show. And
loved it.
Yeah.
And loved it. And was really so taken by that the show foundationally is about brotherhood and friendship and loyalty, right? And in and around all that, I was so drawn to it and I was watching the type of work that I've been dying to do for so long. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, no pressure on you. but yeah, and then for us to wind up on that cosmic collision course, and you know, here we are in Phoenix. What the hell, man?
Yeah.
Good times at the Airbnb tonight. We're going to Airbnb tonight. Sorry to break it to you.
And one of the things.
Phoenix is awesome. Yeah. I love Phoenix. I've spent time here. I've shot movies here. Yes. Yes.
And the Suns are looking good. And you know, and KD was on our set because he was a fan of the show. And also he was, you know, just so you know how realistic the show was, you know, when the movie was done, Mark is like, why don't we screen it at my house? I'm like, all right. And he doesn't tell me anything, but I go to Mark's house. There's KD. There's Steph Curry. There's this one. I'm like, you know, this is a rough cut. I really wasn't ready to show it.
I don't think
everybody.
I got the invite to that one.
Yeah, no.
I've never been so uncomfortable taking a photo with somebody that I was KD. Just hung out to dry. I was like, oh, I stand like, so tall. Like, what, I hold him around his hip? I didn't know what to do. It's like trying to figure out a spot around his waist.
Don't
like,
touch me. So, but you know, one of the things I wanted to do with this new show is, which is a really hard thing to do. You always want to recreate your best experiences. And honestly, Entourage was a family. From the crew to the cast, everybody was just amazing. And we brought pretty much everybody back, you know, and all the actors will be on at some point, but my entire crew, cinematographers, makeup, everything was on this show, and Charlie just fit in seamlessly. So was there any part of you kind of like tonight that you're like, okay, this crew feels like somebody else's, or did you seem like it blended easily?
That's still present.
Yeah.
That still goes on. No, I'm watching back there, and trying to pay just enough attention to where if I have to touch on something spoken about earlier, that I can. And no, I look forward to us being able to share similar stories like you all have historically, with our show. Now, is there any value in talking about now? As soon as I say that, he has to talk about it. Is there value in mentioning that we were going to do first snapshot view of the show on the radio?
Oh my God! Do you know
remember that?
You know what? It's amazing. I forgot about it until you just mentioned it.
Yeah. Can we talk about that?
We were going to act it out on a podcast. Is that what was the original plan, Doug?
We were going to act it out on the podcast. A lot of the
podcast theater.
You mean like read the script? Read the script on the podcast. You're
saying? Yes. Read the script. Yeah. Act it out as if it was a radio show, which they're doing a lot
like
of that
War
stuff.
War of the Worlds.
That would be cool.
Like War of the Worlds.
Like War of the Worlds.
Good reference. So, I wrote a whole scene. Thank God we didn't do that.
Thank God.
Yeah. But it is kind of this cosmic thing that came together. And when I, you know, Charlie was so gracious and generous with his time. And just like I was on Entourage, I'm an asshole. I'll ask for things. So I was like, listen, Charlie, maybe Martin, your dad, would love to be in this show as well. And I had no idea whether he was going to, you know, that could be insulting, you know? Like, if someone asked me if my brother could work with me, I'd fucking tell them to go fuck themselves. But so what was your feeling when I said that?
Well, I was a little hesitant because you had expressed that you would expect him to be playing my dad, right?
Yeah.
And he and I were developing a show where we were playing ourselves. And in the 11th hour, he read the first treatment and he said, this is garbage. I can't do this, you know? And so
I have nothing to do with that show.
He had nothing to
that
do with
that. That was Doug's other show. That was Doug's other show.
And so when this came along and I said, Dad, you're going to be playing yourself. And the first pages of yours that he read, he said, I'm in. Let's do this.
Nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Doug can write a little bit.
Writing is everything.
He's good. This guy's good.
No, but it really is the when you're able to match the actor with the script, that's when it's perfect. Sometimes you can get guys like this who can work with lesser material and make it good anyway, but I think the perfect match is that.
You know, for most of us, learning a second language in high school wasn't exactly a high point of our academic careers. It certainly wasn't a high point for me. 4 years of Spanish, I didn't know anything. And as life would have it, I ended up marrying a Colombian woman who speaks Spanish. And now I wish I paid a little more attention in Spanish class. Now, thanks to Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you're traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Obviously, that's important for me because half of my family speaks fluent Spanish. Now, Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, Spanish, French, Italian, German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Very important. So there's many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, get up to 55% off when you go to babbel.com/victory. That's babbel.com/victory for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
But back to these guys. Can we talk about these guys?
Which guys? Huh?
Not you and I. Charlie and Dylan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk to. You guys, I mean, you guys know each other 30 years.
At least more than that,
I think,
right?
Longer.
40. Over 40.
Oh, God.
I don't know if it's that
86?
Long. 86? Yeah, yeah, it's 37.
Right. Yeah, 37.
Right? Yeah.
So give us...
Good math.
Is everyone familiar with Platoon, which was... Yeah!
Couple of the older guys.
Thank you.
What was that experience like? Because that was like, I mean, that was one of Oliver's first films. I don't know if it was his first directing film.
No, he did Salvador.
Salvador.
Which we went to the premiere, didn't
yes.
And it was great.
Didn't he direct one before that?
The Hand.
The Hand with Hervé Villechaize.
But you know what's...
And he also wrote Scarface. A lot of people don't realize.
And he wrote Conan the Barbarian.
And he wrote Midnight Express.
Won an Oscar for Midnight Express.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me a little bit, I mean, because Charlie, that was your kind of breakout role in that movie. And like your father in Apocalypse, which if anyone's seen Hearts of Darkness, which is an amazing documentary about the making of Apocalypse and how nuts Coppola was and what Martin Sheen had to deal with. The movie, it wasn't very high budget. Nobody could have expected it. Was that just an insane experience to be in the Philippines? Is that where you shot it?
Yeah, I was in the Philippines, and I had been there 10 years prior to that. I was on Apocalypse for 8 months. Not 8 months straight, but I was there for 2, 3, and 3. And
how old were you?
I was 10, and I turned 11.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that was... So to see... To have that experience as a child... Watching Dad do, you know, create that performance in that film, and you know what I, in my opinion, is the greatest film ever made, because there's no computers, there's, you know, everything was practical, and Apocalypse is the kind of film that every time you see it, you see something different, something, and it could be your 100th viewing, and you've seen something you never saw before, so. To go back to the Philippines 10 years later to do my, you know, our Vietnam, you know, my own Vietnam experience, it was a trip, because when I stepped off the airplane, the first thing that hit me were the smells.
Yeah.
You know, it was the burning rubber. It was the jungle. It was the heat. It was, you could smell the oppression there. And so, I think you'd win the lottery in 3 different states on the same night before you'd have a father-son do seminal Vietnam films in the same place 10 years apart.
I never thought about that till right now.
And narrate them both.
Right.
Crazy, yeah. I never thought about that.
So, wow.
And there was a revolution kind of going on there, too.
There was they just ousted Marcos.
There were tanks and guys holding M60s. It was kind of a scary time to be there.
Was there any fun on that show, or was it just like... Whoa.
I had a great time. You know, you had already spent a lot of time in the Philippines, but I had a blast.
Yeah.
My character was supposed to like it there, so I embraced that. Your character was not supposed to like it there, so you kind of probably embraced
that. Yeah.
And you guys also shot that in chronological order, so you guys all showed up as a crew, and then when somebody on
when
one
somebody
of the guys
died, they would disappear. They'd be on a plane back to New York or L.A. Yeah. And it would really feel like they died.
Wow. Yeah. What do you think he's doing right now? Probably sleeping in a really comfortable bed.
Yes.
And you guys went through like a rigorous training thing right?
Yeah, jungle warfare training for a couple weeks, right? 10 days?
Yeah, it was 14.
2 weeks?
14 days, yeah.
Yeah, it was rough.
You know, one of the things, too, that we were talking about the other day, Charlie, we were like talking about what some of your favorite movies that you've done are, and surprisingly to me or whatever, it was not Platoon and Wall Street. And one of the first things that you... started talking about was Major League. Major League's awesome, but what is it about Major League that sort of sits above that, if for lack of a better...
Well, I think that deck is stacked a little bit just based on my you know, deep love for the game, having been a player my whole life, having an opportunity to be a part of that film, and again, you know, fairly low budget. You know, we shot it in Milwaukee in the summer of 88, you know? We were actually there while frickin' Dahmer was active. We didn't find out till later. I was like, what the...
So he could have been on set.
It's probably an extra.
Could have been an extra in the stands.
Indian seats.
Yeah.
That's
anyway,
wild.
But no, it's... it isn't... How I feel about a film isn't necessarily rooted in my own experience or... You know, as an actor or as an audience member, it's about the effect it's had and the response that I get from the people and the fans, and this particular film has just turned into this multi-generational experience that you know, I meet the children of people that saw it as children, and you know, talk about aging you, right? Talk about feeling fucking ancient in the moment. But so, yeah, so that has a lot to do with it.
Plus, you were also throwing 85, 86, which for an actor is impossible.
Yeah, no, right?
Costner was but not you throwing wanted
to
85.
You wanted to play baseball for a while. I mean,
I did until I went to baseball camp in Miller, Missouri. And I saw the kind of talent that was out there, and I saw guys that it was either, baseball for a living or the Army. Or jail, yeah. Or whatever's after that, you know? So I was like, okay, I don't...
In the Philippines, you brought two mitts out and a ball.
I did.
So we were able to have a catch. We were throwing the ball around the Philippines. It was great.
Yeah, so, but still, I mean, maybe you couldn't have been a pro baseball player, but you could throw better than Tim Robbins and Bull Durham.
For sure.
Well, I was proud of the fact they didn't have to film me in a close-up for the entirety of my windup. Because that's how they hide it, when
right.
You can tell a guy's not... Because you can teach someone... to hit, you can teach someone to run, you can't teach someone to throw. You either pick up a baseball and know what to do with it instantly, or you don't. And if you don't, just accept it.
And then one of the other ones we talked about too was Red Dawn. I mean, that was always a favorite of mine. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Red Dawn.
Thank you. Yeah, that was, I mean, God, that was my second movie. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was kind of... You know, we were smoking a lot of pot on that film. The director was smoking a lot of pot on that film. But we formed a brotherhood, a camaraderie. But to see a blown out a Russian tank in Ukraine with Wolverines spray painted across the side of it was like, whoa.
Right.
Wow.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. And didn't that lead to Ferris Bueller? You were friends with Jennifer Grey. Is that true?
That's how that happened. Yes. Yeah. A
little late to the office that day too, as well, right?
About 3 hours. Yeah.
Huh? What about it?
Miracle.
Oh yeah. I was not in it. Unfortunately.
I wasn't either.
Nobody here is involved in it.
But it's a good...
All right. He's all right.
It's a good question, though, but I think it's a good time. Let's open it up to some questions.
I got some questions. Okay. Dylan, this is a good one for you, and this is... What became of the car from the opening credits in Entourage? What happened to Johnny Jones?
You know, I wish I bought that car, and I said... Every year, I said, I should just buy a car like this and just... And let them rent it from me.
He
would have rented it from me, and I would have owned it eventually.
Dylan
but,
said...
We all signed it. It was tough to get everyone to sign it, but the guy said, "Well, you all sign the." He wanted us to sign the dash. I said, "It'd be better if you signed the inside of the glove box." So I signed it, and we got everyone to sign it.
Yeah.
Jeremy Piven really didn't want to do it.
He was the lone holdout. But he did
eventually sign it.
But when Kevin first pitched me that idea, he was like, "Hey, what do you think about me buying this car and then renting it to production?" I said, "It's an absolutely terrible idea." Don't listen to me. That was a good one.
But that guy is. I think he tried to put it up for sale, and he was asking like outrageous money.
Did he try to sell it for like a million bucks? He tried to sell it on Pawn Stars on that show.
He tried to sell it on Pawn Stars, and they were like, "Oh, that's ridiculous. We can't even put that on TV. You're asking way too much money."
And you know, just a little interesting thing. So you know how these things work. The opening titles of Entourage, like, I had nothing to do with. I wouldn't say nothing, but we hire somebody. They come in, just like a director comes in and pitches you his ideas, and you get a bunch of people, and then you pick one. So that car, which became Johnny Drama's car and was kind of, you know, iconic for the show, they put that in, and then I said, wow, that should be, you know, Johnny Drama's car. I didn't know that. I thought you picked that. So that happens. All right.
We got another one. And this is we touched on it a little bit, Charlie, but what film left a lifelong impact on you? Kind of a broad question, but what comes to mind?
Oh, I think we covered it.
So that's what it would be.
Wall
Street doesn't come to mind. What do you think about Wall Street?
I've only seen it twice.
What?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in 20 years.
So good.
I don't know. People like it. Thank you.
It was a tough experience.
It was a very tough experience. Yeah.
Oliver again, second time around.
So, all right, listen, if we want to do that, if we want to take questions from the crowd, does anybody want to come up? Well, you're way, way back, of course. You got one? You got a question?
What do you guys think about like a prequel to Entourage with Johnny Drama in the 90s in L.A. and stuff like that, all his escapades and everything like that?
I think we'd have to be
a sequel.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't sound like Dylan gets that role, unfortunately, which is why he doesn't like that idea. Well, nowadays, he's like, fuck that, bro.
Nowadays, they can computerize right. Yeah. Young. You
like
know?
The Irishman. I'd love to see Sheldon.
The Irishman.
Digitally painted as an 18-year-old. But yeah.
What about anybody else got a question? Anyone else? Because I know we wrote them down. But
wait a minute. This gentleman, how does that involve me?
Yeah, exactly.
We were at the second to last taping of Two and a Half Men that you were there.
Oh, wow.
And we got to meet you. You were charismatic. It was amazing to see you there.
Thank you.
And then, but it was like two episodes later, you were gone. I'm like, ah. Oh. But it was amazing to see there. Yeah, never the same again.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. That was amazing for me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You know, Charlie, I just speaking of that, you know, because obviously you became one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
Yeah.
And then you switch to TV and become the biggest TV star in the world. Was that transition, especially for a multi-camera, which if you guys know what that means, that's on a stage in front of a live audience. Was that a big change?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an adjustment. But the sitcoms that I grew up on, I had already picked out the characters that I could relate to. And it was always the straight guy. It was always the anchor. You know, it was John Amos.
Yeah.
From Good Times.
I don't think he meant the straight guy in that way.
Oh, no, it's a comedic term.
Yeah. Like you know. Seinfeld is the straight guy on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I was wondering what everybody was laughing at. Like, I
maybe they weren't. Something might have happened back there, but that's okay.
Sorry.
What do you got?
This is for Charlie. When you were in Tucson filming Major League, what have you been back to Tucson? And what were some of your stomping grounds? Like, where did you like to go while you were in Tucson?
Wow, that was a long time ago, and the workload while we were here was pretty extreme, so there wasn't a lot of downtime, a lot of opportunity to go out, you know, that's true, there wasn't, but the DoubleTree I stayed at was awesome.
And I was in Tucson last week because my son goes to U of A, so I was at, where was I? Dirtbags, and I was forced to do a keg stand at the AAPI Pie frat house, which is...
Which, by the way, strangely, both Dylan and Charlie didn't know what a keg stand was, which I think is odd.
Really?
Never seen a keg stand.
I think it's weird that you know what that is.
Two things. I never went to college, and I didn't drink.
Me neither.
I didn't drink fucking beer, dude. So, like that.
We got a question over here.
Charlie, everyone here wants to know, do you still have tiger blood?
What's up, tiger blood? Wow, if I ever had tiger blood, I'd be dead. The tiger's dead. It's just, it's so confusing.
I think one of the interesting things, though, and what we will show on the new show is... You know, we are in this age where people understand addiction and mental health. And, you know, what I can tell you is I don't know that Charlie. What I do know is one of the nicest, most gracious, awesome people.
Thank you.
In the world.
Thank you, Doug.
And you know, the journey up to this point has been short. It will continue. But, Charlie, you've been nothing but a man of your word and a man of integrity. For today, I saw you. So
thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions up here? Anybody but you, bro. What are you doing? Somebody get this guy a water. Get this guy a water. Oh, we got it.
Gentlemen, in light of the tremendous box office success of Top Gun Maverick, when can we expect Hot Shots Part 3?
Great question. Run the clip. Just kidding.
We have the trailer for that that no one knows about.
Hilarious.
B-roll.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to do anything that you know might be misinterpreted as you know. I think what Top Gun Maverick did for the industry, for us as movie going fans. For the world, I think they need to have the final say. I really do. And in fact,
David Zucker called me. You put that together.
I did not put that. I mean, I might have been in the middle of it.
No,
I make moves. Sorry about that.
And he was
talking. Put me on the spot.
He was talking.
So everyone knows David Zucker is the director of and the writer. He wrote Hot Shots 2 and Airplane with his brother.
Yes. And he reached out and he said, do you want to do Hot Shots 3?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And Connelly did this?
I set it up, bro.
He set it up.
Wow. You might not be able to get your car home, but I could put Hot Shots 3 together.
And I said, is the studio involved? He said, no. I said, do you have a script? He says, no, but we have a lot of great ideas. And I said, okay, then maybe this is a premature phone call. And he said, well, what I'd like you to do is do a spoof on the video that Cruise did to open the film, saying welcome back to the movies after COVID. And I said, so you think that will then... you know, light the fire under the... It was such
wow.
a...
it was... Sorry about that.
Connelly really fucked you again, huh?
Thank you.
Well, interesting, when we were flying here today on the plane, where Dylan and I were... We didn't have it. Somebody else was watching Maverick, and Dylan and I were, like, hanging over the guy's shoulder watching it, and Charlie was watching 80 for Brady, which I thought was interesting. The last movie Charlie Sheen is going to be watching on the plane, 80 for Brady.
How was 80 for
That's
Brady?
That's what I said, what?
I'm it's like, not
what?
Bad. It's yeah. not bad, yeah. It's exactly what you expect.
I mean, yeah, right?
No, I knew there wouldn't be Wi-Fi on the plane, and I thought I have to download something onto my phone. And I was, you know, I was in a bit of a rush, and I saw it and clicked and downloaded.
You don't have to explain this.
I mean, of all the movies, though, this is so crazy.
We love Tom Brady. Everyone would always say to us, "Oh, you're Giants, New York guys." But you know what? Tom, Gronk, Edelman—they were all very good to us, and all were in the show. So
best cameo we ever had. Tom Brady was he signed every autograph, took photos with the whole crew. He's really, really great.
Well, not every autograph. Connelly can tell that what they did to Brady, but we had a guy in our crew. What happened?
Listen, you know, and even with Charlie, when we're walking, people come up to Charlie with like, how many major league things? Lots of things to sign, right? And generally speaking, you know, you sign one or two, but they're pretty much going on eBay. So usually people just will sign one or two. But Tom Brady was going to do the EPK, which is called the Electronic Press Kit. And he was going to do an interview for the DVD, and it was just going to live...
On the Entourage movie.
On the Entourage movie. And he was walking to go do this sit-down interview for Doug, and the prop guy comes up with an industrial plastic see-through garbage bag full of footballs. Did you hear this, Charlie?
He
hands Brady the ball. Brady stares daggers at him, bro. I was like, am I just broken my legs? I was like, holy shit, this isn't happening. It's like watching, and Brady looks at the guy, signs the ball, hands it to him. Guy takes out a second ball, hands it to Brady.
Oh, wow.
Brady looks at the ball, hands it back to the guy, got in his car and drove away.
Yeah.
And didn't do the
interview. He got one. He was lucky to get one. He's going to sell it on eBay. They're different. This is not a real thing.
This is a crew guy. This is a guy who worked on the show. It's a terrible thing.
He's taking advantage.
It's a really, really, really bad thing to do to Tom Brady that's done the show twice. Because the other thing that but the Brady Wahlberg cameos were the Manning brothers. And they ditched Doug at the last second and left us.
They ditched all of us.
Yeah. I didn't have to rewrite the script, though. You did, right? So they kind of ditched you, and Brady came through. By the way,
that's a kind of funny behind-the-scenes story, because as being diehard Giants fans, and Eli, we ended up on his podcast, so we made good. But what happened was, right after the Giants won the Super Bowl that we were at here, in Arizona, which was like,
2007, right?
He's a weird Dolphins fan from New York. Don't ask. But for me, obviously, I'm at the Super Bowl, and Eli just wins the Super Bowl with the Tyree catch. And then I'm sitting at my desk getting ready for the next season, and the phone rings, my cell phone. And it's Eli Manning, which is the type of stuff that would happen. And he's like, hey, Doug, it's my favorite show. I want to be on it. I'm like, you're on it, you know? So I then spent the next 6 months getting this script ready, and then the Giants... When the season was starting to come around for us, Giants lose to Minnesota, and I call Eli because I think we're friends now, and I call Eli and I'm like, hey, it's Doug, script's ready to get you to shoot. No callback. Call again, no callback. I have Jerry call and be like, hey, it's Turtle, your favorite show. Nothing. And then I called his agent, and now we're like 2 weeks out from shooting, and I call his agent and I'm like, okay, I need Eli. We're ready to shoot. And he says, you know, we lost to Minnesota. You can understand he wants to focus on football. And, you know, my words were...
Doug said some things.
Yeah, that's what I understand. You know, how hard we worked to put this script together, and now what? How am I going to replace Eli Manning? And I remember, you know, this is when you see what Mark is like as a producer and a movie star, but I was in the office probably throwing some shit around the office and breaking some things, and Mark came in, and he's like, what's the problem? I'm like, well, Eli Manning screwed us over. I don't know what we're going to do. He's like, maybe me and Tom Brady should do it. I go, that'll work.
No, didn't he say, you know, Doug, don't worry about it. Tom, me and Tom will do it. You're like, Tom who? Yeah. Brady. Yeah, let's do it, right? Let's run it back.
So we were very lucky to get that. And now we've made peace with Eli so I can root for the Giants again. But that was tough for a while. So,
all right, let's take one more question. Anybody got anything good? What do you got? All right, here we go.
So my question is for Doug. Ari is just an amazing character to watch, and one of the most amusing parts is his experience through the world of private schools in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, what was it like for you behind the scenes to, like, take your experiences, your frustrations, and just, did you put that into the character and those storylines? Like,
oh, yeah.
Was that a lot of fun for you, like, venting? Like, tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Ari, you know, my son is in the back, and his mother, my ex-wife, who's still, we're very close, but, I mean, that was, she's Melissa, and Perry Reeves was based on her, and, you know, I tried to cast someone that looked like her. So those therapy sessions were me and my ex-wife. I almost didn't write them. I almost just recorded them, you know? But my son Lucas, who's U of A, Bear Down. Boo! Yeah, you can't boo Lucas. So, but anyway, he did not get into... Oh, you did? Sorry.
I was a boo.
So he did not get into the Brentwood School, and I had these people... from the school, and now I shouldn't say, you know, I'm fucking... I shouldn't say anything right now because I'm fucking nuts and I had a baby 120 days ago, so... yeah, and I'm, by the way, I'm so not a Hollywood guy, but my statistics look terrible, so... but I'm gonna have to go through this school shit again, which is torture, so... What happened is they came to the set and I did all the stuff you could do, like, can I put you in this scene? Can I do this? And then my son...
Doug was kissing this guy's ass for weeks.
And my son got rejected with a form letter. Lucas may not even know this. And
he does now.
But then I wrote, you know, I got to write that story how I see it. Now, I ended up changing it that Ari actually cost his son that, which... I didn't cost my son that baby. But, you know, it was great. Ari was, you know, E and Ari were kind of like my combination of my personality. I don't speak like Ari, but I sometimes think like that. So it was great to write. That was, you know, when everybody says what was easy to write and what was hard to write, Ari, I could spew out stuff and fantasize. The really tough scenes were to write were kind of E and Vince when they got real. Those were the tough scenes, and I don't even know if people liked those scenes, to be honest.
I don't think they did.
But it was great to have that kind of alter ego, even though now the world wants to kill me and says Ari is awful, even though I think we all see Logan Roy speaks worse than Ari, but anyway, guys, this was
Thank you guys so much.
This was great.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I want, you know, what I said in our pitches for our thing last week is that, you know, we're lucky enough to meet Charlie, and he's going to be back big one way or the other. We hope it's with us, so we'll see what happens.
Right on.
So ramble on, everybody.
Thank you guys very much.
Right,
thank you.